And welcome to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Palzane, here with Taylor Barrett.
Hello.
And our guest this week, Khalil. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So Khalil's a social worker and also one
of the executive directors of Immunable Studios, which is another nonprofit organization.
Yep. They recently had an awesome show. So please go look them up and follow them. But right now, I just want to do a real quick disclaimer, which is to say this is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health, but do not claim to be professionals in the space. Our intention is to have conversations around lived experience. And as a result, we may not always agree with everything our guests say, but we do intend to hold space for conversations and learning from one another. Khalil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Right off the top, I wanted to talk a little bit about like relaxation, because that's something I have a problem with. Are you pretty good at relaxing?
Yes and no. Mostly it's the yes part, okay. But like it took, I think, a couple years for me to like really understand what like relaxing into my body and into the world, I would say.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like there's different ideas about relaxation, because sometimes it can just be like bodily, sometimes it can be mentally. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you get enough relaxation of both?
No. Yes and no.
Which one do you feel like you struggle with?
I think it's like the bodily part. I think that like my brain can like separate, but
you're
like
always moving.
Yeah, I'm always moving, but like my body is always like go, especially after like high moments of like stress, you know what I mean? And then like the come down off like the cortisol in your brain just like takes like honestly like days.
Really?
You know what
really?
I mean? Like get my body not to be like clenched up, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think like the impacts of like stress, like they like you were saying, like it is a length of time that you kind of have to like let your body physically come down from that moment. What do you think you would say helps you with relaxation?
Massages. I can't say that right, but like, you know, massages, like I like have a tendency of like, you know, going into like the nature, I like, you know what I mean, like of like really just like disconnecting myself from being around people, and like holding space, you know, and trying to be intentional.
Sure.
I think as I like entered my 30s, I was just like allowing people just to like, you know, in your 20s, you're like, anyone can like just like come in and do whatever, you know what
kumbaya.
I mean? Yeah, kumbaya. And then like, and then I just was always taken to whirlwinds. So like, as I like approached 30, I was like, I want everything to be intentional. I want my relationships to be intentional. I want the time I spent doing something to be intentional. I want there to be intentionality with everything and to be more intimate.
Yeah.
And in doing that, like my life, like kind of like opened up a little bit more of like not like having unnecessary stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
and I like that both of the examples you listed were like one was very much like a bodily relaxation example, getting massages, and the other one was like very mind peaceful, calming, like being in nature. And like, I think those are both very good examples of each of those categories.
Yeah. What about you, Taylor? How do you relax?
Okay. So I have this issue with relaxing where like, I might like physically relax my body, but like my brain never like shuts off. So I like me relaxing is playing video games usually. Okay. But then I play like really competitive video games and I get fucking stressed out.
Yeah,
and
you
so,
do.
Like, so like, am I relaxing? Am I really relaxing? Or am I just caught in this spiral of like, this is relaxing, I swear.
Yeah.
And it's not. I feel like it would be a wise idea to like play more story games or like fucking watch more movies or some shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's
something that's engaging and almost takes over some of that brain space.
Yeah. Where I can just like shut off, you know what I mean? Instead of like my body shutting off, my brain like now working overtime.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I struggle with relaxation in the sense that like, I know it's important. I know that you need to do it, but when I'm relaxing, I'm thinking. And so I'm always moving. I'm just like, if I'm cleaning, I'm doing something, you know, even if I'm thinking, I'm productive. And I think like that productivity trap is kind of something that we all kind of get stuck in.
I think I would have to agree like 1,000% of like, I personally do that too, where I'm like, I have to go. But then I like somebody mentioned this to me recently, actually, of like, what is unnecessary stress for you? Like, what is unnecessary? Like, why am I constantly like giving myself unnecessary stress? Like, life is already stressful as it is. Mm-hmm. But like, for some reason, I'm putting on another like layer of that, of like, I have to be perfect.
Yes.
And everything that I do, and I have to make sure that it looks good. And even if there's like moments of stress, particularly in the beginning of like when I was trying to relax, it was like not happening because it wasn't like perfect enough.
Yeah. Well, and I think like perfect relaxation, you know, it's like that would be such a hard thing to find because it's like, especially with the perfectionist part, because it's mm-hmm. just like the thing that would make it perfect is if I was, is if the things were done, but they're not. So how do I, yeah, that's tricky. That's tricky.
And I think the opposite of the, like the productivity trap can also be true. I think that like, I've definitely fallen into the opposite trap where I'm just like, I don't want to be this like overworked, overstressed, like, like almost neurotic person about all this other
you
shit.
You don't want to be me.
That's not what I was saying.
That's what, it's okay. What
I was visualizing something else, and then I saw you like leaning
an afro.
Okay. He doesn't listen to it. I was visualizing my fucking uncle. He's made like one Facebook post in the last like 10 years ever, and it was about fucking donating money to Trump, and I was like, okie dokie, dude. Yeah, well, alrighty.
Check back in 4 years.
Yeah. But yeah, like, and so like the desperation to like not be like that, like just this like stuffy, like in a cubicle 24/7 type
overworked
person.
Yeah,
like the desperation to not be like that has caused me at times to like force myself to, not even force myself, just like fall into a lack of productivity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's easy. I think it's, you know, like once you've been overworked, it's really easy to be like, okay, so if working too much felt bad, maybe not working at all feels better. Mm-hmm.
No safe middle ground.
There isn't. Well, I mean, I felt like before COVID, I was like working two jobs, and then COVID happened, and then I was working zero jobs, and I was like, well, this is have to be way better, and it was just a different kind of bad.
Yeah, no, I was working two jobs before COVID as well. And like, and one of my jobs, I was making like tinfoil animals.
That's sick.
And that's stuff. A job. That's fucking awesome.
It was like, well, because I worked at a place called Montage.
I've been there.
Peace, and we would yell, and I would get into, and it was like, you know, we'd get into fights with people, like, you know, I mean, with like customers.
Okay.
And so that's a different like type of stress. But, but like, and I would go to bed at like 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, wake up at 3, and then like, and be like, I feel like I did nothing. Like, you know what I mean? And like,
it's night
like,
shift kicks your ass.
It really does.
Like, psychologically, it really fucks with you. This like expectation of like daytime is when you're supposed to exist. So like nothing's around during the nighttime. You have to, like, you have to find like the one restaurant that's 24 hours. You have to like find.
You're eating
like,
gas stations.
Yeah. Yeah. You get really close with the overnight gas station people.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're angry all the time. And then like your regular friends have regular jobs. So they're like, hey, you want to hang out during the day? And I'm like, no, actually, like you're asking me to hang out at 7 o'clock at night. I'm working.
Yeah.
And like you just kind of like lose yourself to that.
Yeah. And then like staying up late for you is staying up until like 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. Someone's like, why are you drinking at 8 a.m? And you're like, I'm about to go to bed.
Yeah.
This is my bedtime.
I'm drinking at your 11 o'clock at night,
exactly.
Actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no. And we'd like, you know, yeah. And it's just like, and before COVID, I think like COVID was like, you know, that pause moment.
Yeah.
And I think that like for a person like me, like I didn't know how to like fucking pause at all. Mm-hmm. Like it was such a nightmare of like, no, you're not working, and like you have your other job that was like my social work
what
job.
Are we all gonna do?
And like, yeah,
all the
like,
stress,
what are we gonna do, and like what's gonna happen, like what do you want to do? I was like, no one ever asked me that, like, you know, I'm just like here to get money. And that's such like a horrible mindset, by the way, to be like
it, I mean, my perspective on that is like, you, an individual kind of has to have an income. It's a weird sort of like stigma to like, you absolutely have to have an income, and like I get it, but also if I'm going to have an income, I want it to be doing something that like I passionately give a shit about. Like I don't give a fuck about carpets. So when I was cleaning carpets, I made every excuse to not clean these fucking carpets that I possibly could. And now I'm like, I legitimately give a shit. I've always
been about carpets specifically.
Finally, they changed me. I've always given a shit about the demographic that we have as clients. And like, that's, it's really like humbling and like rewarding to be able to like make money doing the thing that I love. You know, it's like when someone wants to be a professional fucking streamer or some shit.
Yeah.
Most people can't do that and make money, but somebody that does, like, yeah,
I can help and make money. That's dope. Well, and I feel like that, like trying to find like a passion in something, because it's like, if I'm going to be tired, I want it to be tired for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, like I recently got like a computer, got like some new music equipment. I've been staying up super fucking late, later than I should, to make music. But at the same time, like every day I go in tired. It's like, it's not like the tired of like, I fucking stayed up drinking last night at a party, and like, that's why I'm tired. It's like, I was doing something I wanted to with the hours I had. And, you know, like, even if I'm tired, I know at the end I have that thing.
Yeah, yeah. You have something tangible out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, something got done, something got completed. So you made something into this, like, into, like, the world, you know?
Yeah.
That's not just gone.
Yeah. I was gonna ask though. You brought up sleep earlier. How do you feel like sleep impacts your ability to relax, or the lack of it?
The
lack of it affects your ability not to relax.
I think the lack of it that doesn't like it personally. Like, I'm a heavy sleeper.
Okay,
it took me like years. Like, I was just like saying like earlier, it's like I had to be like a motivational interviewed by like one of my supervisors to like wake up early at 10 o'clock.
That's right.
You know, but particularly with me, it's like with stress. If I get really stressed out, like when I found out like COVID happened, and everything was going to be shut down, I literally fell asleep until 4 o'clock the next day. I went to bed at 9 and slept.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 19 hours.
Like 19 hours.
Holy shit.
My boss was calling me and was about to bring in the cops because they thought that I like did something. Like, yeah, you know, because it's like, like, this person's
especially
never
the work. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was supposed to be in there at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's now like we're coming on like 3:30 and like
having like, called or like, been like, hey, sorry.
There was like a bunch of calls, you know, and like, so like knowing like realizing that, like, you know, when I am stressed out, my body will like oversleep. When I'm like, you know, and it's like, I don't know, like, I love to sleep, but also like I love not to sleep.
Yeah.
I love being awake in the middle of the night, just like doing things and and obsessing.
Yep.
But also like, I know that that doesn't help with my stress.
Yeah. I have such a hard time with the nighttime, because it's like, it's always been this like almost like a sacred time for me, where I'm
peaceful.
Like,
you're almost guaranteed to be left alone.
Nobody expects a fucking thing at 3 a.m, you know, other than for me to probably be asleep.
No one's hitting you up. And if there was an emergency, people could like, you know, like people call 911.
You gotta wait, like, you know, that's a 6 o'clock emergency. but yeah, I mean, I have such a hard time, because it's like, I really enjoy staying up. I really enjoy just like having those hours. It's when I feel most productive. But yeah, like, I mean, to say that like my day doesn't suffer because of that, and that I don't get more stressed, because there was definitely like a period where I was like, I feel like I'm angrier about this than I should be. And like, you know, I try to like check in with myself. I'm just like, okay, what am I missing? Have I drank water today? No, the thing that keeps you alive. Okay, what have I slept enough, eaten? Like, try to go through like a checklist of like, am I mad about the thing, or am I just mad because I haven't blank?
Mm-hmm. And that sounds like intentional too, of like, you know, of like what we were talking about earlier, of like intentionality of like, did I eat? Have I drinking water? Yep. Have I gotten my basic like needs met before? Because it's like sometimes, like particularly when I've been in like, you know, and my mentee bees, my mental breakdowns, like I've only drinking coffee all day. I have like, I have not eaten anything. I have like slept for 4 hours, and then I'm like sitting here spiraling out to everybody, being like, why is this happening? And they're like, you need to eat. Like, people would force me to eat.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have some folks around me who are just like, I haven't seen you eat today. Here's just eat this. Just, you know,
here's a snack. No obligation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
If you want it, which I think you do, you can have it.
Your body probably says no, but you need it. Well, I mean, I don't know. Just being able to have those people that are like, you know, almost like able to see you outside of you, because it's like, I don't think I realize how tired I am till somebody says you look tired, you know what I mean? I don't think I realize how stressed I look till someone says, hey, take a seat, you know.
Well, and it's also crazy too, because I don't know about you guys, but like for me, it's like I run at such like a high threshold of stress that it's like, so like some people would even say it's like my baseline, and I don't want to use too much whatever, but like
baseline's pretty basic.
My god, Zane,
we got there. We're fine, go ahead.
But like, you know, the baseline of like, you know, I just have all these stresses, and like my brain just goes like, oh, I have to do this, you 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 have to do this.
Yep.
And like, and then I'll just be like running at like 100 miles an hour, and then it takes really a couple people to be like, stop me, and be like, hey, like, stop spiraling about this.
When
right
you
now
don't have like a list of things to do, does it feel like you're like missing your like phone keys or wallet or some shit?
Yeah,
like 1,000%. Like, I think that for me, like when I don't have anything to do, I'm like, well, I'm not productive.
Yeah,
my life's a piece of shit. I'm a piece of shit.
And you're probably forgetting something.
Yeah, I'm forgetting something. So I like disappointed people in my life.
There you go.
Like,
yeah, you know, I have all this free time to think about how I suck.
You stay busy to avoid the negative self-talk.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I definitely get that. Yeah, I think that relaxation is something that it's absolutely necessary. But I mean, I think parsing out that time and making sure that it is very intentional is extremely important.
And it looks different to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, cool. We're going to take a real quick break and we'll be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Pal Zane, here with Taylor Barrett.
What the fuck is up?
And Khalil.
Hey,
what's up? So with the Smoke Break, we're here and we're talking about culturally specific services. As a Black social worker, as the other host who is here right now, we wanted to talk about this.
Taylor's in the corner,
for real. He's gonna go do a smoke break real quick.
For those of you not watching the video, I am not POC.
yep. That's the update. So watch us on YouTube.
I mean, I'm Hispanic, but everybody can see me. You know what I mean?
That's true. Well, I mean, I think like with culturally specific services, like there's so much that you really don't take into consideration if you only view it through the lens of like one kind of people.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of a big problem with it. What has been your experience with noticing a need for services like this?
Not trying to say it to go too much into it. Sure. Actually, this is what I'm here, you know. When I was younger, I was like in homeless services, right? Okay. And like I was like 19, and one of the first instances was like I was in the adult shelter, mm-hmm. and I saw a Black woman get beat up.
Wow.
And I went to the white person at the desk and was like, hey, like, can I get your help? And she's like, I don't care. She's like, let it just happen.
Whoa.
And so like I like carried that with me, and it was like a very like, you know, big moment. And my first client, actually, she was like a Black, like, you know, she was like a Black mom.
Mm-hmm.
And we were coming back from our rec group, and she pulled me aside and just like started, and she like, I was the only person she could feel safe with because I was the only Black person.
Yeah.
You know, and no one else was like listening to her about her like needs of like, you know, all these things that were like happening to her. And I walked her. I remember walking her to like her like for a safe location because, you know, for safety. And you know, she like hugged me and she was like, you're the first person I felt safe with. And and then like ever since then, I started seeing like a need for like Black folks and like people of color, that they were just like falling through the cracks.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to like, and it's not a me thing, but like, as I progressed in my career, more Black and brown people started coming on to like the role, and they were noticing it too.
Yeah.
And like, so like to like, I wanted to make like a net to like catch people to really meet them where they're at.
No, I think that's important.
That's huge.
No, that's really important. I think that like in general, people kind of just like slip through the cracks, and the more marginalized they become, the less of a priority they become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
1,000%. I don't know. Like, have you experienced that with what you do?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been working at this place for about 2 years, and I've definitely like noticed sometimes like if there is a client who acts in an angry, or let's just say aggressive, because that's what white people call it, fashion, that there's often a need to respond in a way that's just like, oh, push them out. You know, this mm-hmm. is scary. They're Black. They could have a gun. You know what I mean? There's all these assumptions that come with it. And I don't think everybody does it intentionally. I also don't think that no one's doing it intentionally, you know? So I've just noticed that, you know, with the perception of how POCs, you know, come across to a lot of white folks, that like that's is as much of a problem as it is that it gets dragged into America's stuff, it also gets dragged into like every part of the systems with it.
Yeah. And I think that social work, and particularly like mimics, like, you know, like whiteness, and like when it means to be like perfect or a good like client.
Mm-hmm.
And like if services aren't tailored towards like, or really tailored towards white people, mm-hmm. then like it's never going to be meant for like, you know, people of color. You know, and if we like look at like, you know, social work like across the board, like Black and brown people are more likely to be excluded for longer periods of time,
yep.
not get the services that they need. You know, the reason why Section 8 was such a like a big deal, like of like not having like it couldn't be a two parent household, mm-hmm. was because that like, and that's why like Black men were taken away from from, like, you know, women of, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's no, it's a system that's, yeah, it's part of a system that, like, historically has created rules and then decided that black folks or marginalized folks were breaking the rules that they created.
Yeah, and like one thing I've noticed, not only, like you said, Zane, is like with there being a reaction to just like any POC folks that are like getting escalated in any way, not only is there a reaction to that, but the reaction seems a lot different usually than if it was just like a white kid. Usually if it's a white kid, it's just like, okay, fuck this. Yeah. Like, this person's
getting escalated. It's them.
We're gonna have to talk for like, let's go on a walk and get some coffee or some shit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, oh, this is a question of like safety now, even though the thing that we're reacting to is like the exact same thing. It's now become a question of safety. And that's a confusing like distinction that I've seen.
Yeah,
be made sometimes.
I've seen a black boy smoke weed and them talking about kicking him out of all services, and a white person smoking harder substances and then being like, oh, what does this person need? They need something.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like how like a black or a brown body is like viewed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like,
well, and I think it's, I don't know. The thing that I think about a lot is that like a lot of some of like the biggest atrocities have been justified with the idea of like safety. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's just like, we have to keep ourselves safe from black people. We have to keep our country safe. So it's just like, with the idea of safety, you can basically justify anything, you know?
But who makes safety?
Yeah. Who decides what safe is?
Well, and to like demonize a demographic as a safety issue is like appalling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, it's easier for folks, we won't just say white folks, but I think it's easier for people to like put things in a category of like, this is safe and you know, I can be around this, or like, this isn't safe and like, it just needs a tiny little neighborhood where it stays there, you know?
Yeah. And we've seen what happens when that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you know, yeah, when you talk about safety, I find it interesting because it's like the people who've made safety, the people who've like constructed safety.
Sure.
It's all like who has been villainized the most, you know what I mean? Throughout multiple forms of media, through the seven pillars of like, you know, being a society, religion, family, TV, art, judicial, like, you know what I mean? Social services, like, you know what I mean? Like who has like never been like uplifted and kind of been vilified in the corner.
Well, and I think that, that like if the goal is safety, then like inclusion is the, like, I think isolation is the thing that like creates the problems that we're trying to avoid, right? We're just like, oh, these people are violent. Let's put them in an area where we make them desperate, and then violence is more of a reaction. Then they're more they create the problem and then point at us and say like, why are you like this?
Yeah. Like depriving somebody of resources and then arresting them for stealing is the most insane shit that like a government could do. And it's been like proven that was like literally tactics that they used, you know, fucking, they didn't just happen to grab a red crayon when they were fucking redlining. Like,
yeah,
it was gross.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to point out, like, even in services where like the things that we've described have happened like in the building that we're like working.
Yeah, in the building, and in the time that we've been there.
And even just like how fresh I am, like I'm I've worked there about a year less than Zane, and like it was recently too that there was like a black girl that came in, and she was like, had like just rained or something. She needed like take a shower, and then she like needed something for her hair, and we didn't have anything for black hair. We didn't have like cocoa butter, like nothing. We didn't have anything that she was asking for as far as like a black person's hygiene, you know what I mean? And like that it's so strange that I can just get overlooked like that.
Well, I mean, I think that that's actually a really good point, because it wasn't until like I got there that I was like, I did see Afro pics. I did see little things of like coconut oil and stuff like that. Like, so it was like, but those were things I hadn't considered, you know, like I would have just been like, we need shampoo and conditioner, you know what I mean? Which is like usually like what they have.
Well, yeah, for a long time people would come in and we'd only have like, you know, just like regular people stuff, but it wasn't like tailored towards anybody that needed a bonnet, a do-rag, you know what I mean? Like the pick, and like, you know, and presenting yourself in society to get jobs, to like, you know, go to housing appointments and all that stuff. Like, it's like so needed.
Yeah. Well, our hair looks rough when it's not all done up. No, you know what I mean? You saw me a second ago. No,
exactly. That's why I'm wearing a do-rag right now. Like, I can't come in looking like a mess. Like, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's what I'm here for. I come in here looking like a mess.
Yeah.
You two don't have to.
Comparatively look great. Yeah, no, I think that, you know, like having been in it for a longer period or for longer than I was originally, like being able to look at all the examples of, you know, opportunities that folks are missing, opportunities that other folks can get. Cause yeah, I just don't think there's a lot of considerations taken, and it's hard to consider those things if you haven't had those experiences.
No, you haven't. I like ran a, no, you haven't. And like, I don't know, like, I ran a men's group, like mm-hmm. a black men's group. Yeah. And like, even like, and I, like, and for what I was like realizing from that, I was like, we went to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm, we mm-hmm. like, we fucking like went to like the African American History Museum and to like
the cool
see
places.
These like folks like build a sense of identity because yeah. they haven't been given that yeah. or like knowing who they are to stand on 10 toes down.
Yeah.
It's for like how they want to move forward. Like, has not only been the most healing thing, but like kind of made me like realize for myself of like, we heal each other.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like at the end of the day, it's like the person that looks like you in the room is the person that's going to help you along in your path.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
And there's always the possibility that somebody else might, but it's like you are more often going to look to somebody who you can identify with and say, like, I don't have to explain to you how awkward it is when I walked into the grocery store and everyone followed me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's important. And there's just a lot of a perspective. And I think it just goes back to like lived experience, because like you have lived experience in different areas. Right. And it's like the value of I've been through this, so I can see it from this way is the thing that like allows us to meet each other's needs a little bit more effectively.
And like I think as a white person, it's kind of like our responsibility, like just like ethically, it's our responsibility sure. to like acknowledge that like we don't know most of the shit like that, like
sure.
until I like had a friend that was like, fucking, I don't want to go into the store, this guy is like always says racist shit to me, mm-hmm. and I was just like, that's never happened to me. And I was like 5 years old, my best friend fucking O'Shea, his name's O'Shea Jackson, which is actually Ice Cube's name, which is hilarious. Shout outs to him. But fucking yeah, he just like didn't want to go to the store that was like right next to where we lived.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's the closest one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like that was an experience where I was like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that that could happen to somebody. And like yeah. the more you're willing to be like, this doesn't make sense to me, but it's there's a good chance it's fucking A, true and happening to a lot of people. Like,
yeah.
I think that's kind of like our responsibility. It's just accept the ignorance towards the like the experiences that a lot of, I don't know, people of color have had.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that like the acknowledgement of like, I don't know, is like the spot that allows you to now, like, say, if you can acknowledge that you don't know, then you can go seek the information, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully. Because I don't know, like, typically, like, from what I've seen is like, you know, people like not wanting to learn the information and live and I don't know. And hopefully we can get to the point of like, I want to know better. Like,
yeah. Well, and hopefully, and this is probably gonna be controversial. we've been around enough episodes. I think that there needs to be, I want to say need. I think that it would be helpful if there was a way that when white folks were just like, hey, I don't know, if we didn't just automatically say, well, like, it's not my job.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, 1,000%.
Okay, cool. Because if everybody says it's not my job, then like it's an expectation for you to do your job better without telling you what your job entails.
No, I
hate with bosses.
I agree. I'm talking about like living and I don't know, as in like I don't want to learn from like I don't know.
Like you're not comfortable like learning new information that might unsettle you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that a lot of even like, you know, as like I have to acknowledge like I'm a man, right? Mm. But like I can play stupid
right.
to things.
Right.
So I don't have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so to like live in the uncomfortability of to like seek. You know what I mean? That information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If that is like potentially asking the person in the room, or if that is like going up and picking up a book.
Yeah.
Also right. like having the motivation to understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There has to be a desire to learn. Otherwise, like you're just, you know, what is this to pass a test? Like, there's not a pop quiz at the end.
Yeah. This isn't like a regurgitate the info type of thing. This is like let it sink in and let it like,
yeah.
I almost want to say like shape you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not supposed to make you feel fucking great, but it's also like it gives you a perspective on like experiences that you'll probably not you too, but that
yeah,
I'll probably never have as a white person. And it's like,
yeah,
there has to be like a level of curiosity and like compassion towards just the fucking shit that's happened, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, I don't know, even as a black person, there's a lot of stuff I just didn't know. about like that DC trip really just opened my eyes of being like, oh yeah, these shackles were made to be uncomfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like that, but that's something that I didn't even know as a Black person. So it's like, I think that, you know, at the same time, it's helpful for us to kind of just figure out like, what are our needs, or like, what are the needs that we may not know? Cause like, I'm always doing my hair, but I didn't think that other people needed hairspray, you know? All right, cool. We're going to take a real quick break and we'll be right back with a smoke break. And welcome back to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Pal Zane, here with Taylor Barrett.
Good morning, Vietnam.
And Khalil.
Hi.
We are going to wrap up our last portion of the show by talking about
Legacy.
The hospital here in Portland. No, not at all.
So, where were you born?
Yeah.
What is your sign?
Yeah. Ooh, I can't tell you. It's Capricorn.
Libra, Scorpio, baby. Yeah, I can't tell you and then tell us. You fucking lunatic.
So, Legacy. So Legacy, you were talking about a little bit about going to a funeral today. And yeah. It kind of had you like thinking a little bit about, you know,
what we leave behind.
What we leave behind.
Yeah, like what do we leave behind? I don't know, like I find it within myself of seeing all these like people I know that have passed.
Sure.
You know, of like, what am I going to leave behind? Yeah. Am I going to leave behind my the memories of like, you know, is it just going to be my memories? Am I going to like have an impact in this world?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And I think that we don't talk about that enough of like, what am I creating? Because like as artists or like art or whatever you want to call what we do, of like we build something and then it gets teared down, you know, like we build the spaces and then it gets torn down.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what are we going to build that like lasts, you know?
Yeah. I think that that's a really important question. I lost a friend when I was relatively young. So like the idea of losing somebody and, you know, like what they left me with, which was just like so many good memories, like almost like a compass sometimes of like how I should interact with the world. So it's definitely something that like I've thought a lot about, and even just like, you know, what am I going to leave behind? I think sometimes we put like an unnecessary pressure on even leaving something behind, which I think is like leaving something behind is positive, but like feeling the need to, or like that you didn't do enough if you didn't, I feel like gets into like a tricky area.
Yeah. I mean, Legacy is a difficult subject to like consider, because it's hard to think about it without almost like getting into like vain territory. Because it's like how cool do I want to be perceived after I die? But like, I don't know. I think everybody kind of fantasizes about, maybe I'm weird for this, like if and when you think about what would my funeral look like, I think everybody kind of wants to be like, it's big fucking, you know, I impacted this many people and had all these positive ways. But like what I want to leave behind, and this is a weird way to gauge it, is like I want people to miss me, not that they still need me, but I want to be valuable enough in their life just as far as those interactions to like to miss me, to wish I was still there. And I'm not, you know, I'm not like bailing, being like, ah, motherfuckers, you like you miss me, but just to have enough of a positive impact on people that they miss me, you know?
Yeah, no, I like that perspective, because it's just like, I when I'm gone, I want there to be a moment where somebody's like, man, it'd be really cool if you were here.
Yeah. And like, I wanted to distinguish that from like needing me to be there. Like, I want to set up my kids and my family and anybody that I know to be able to like exist without me.
Sure.
Comfortably. Sure. But I still want to be a positive, you know, entity in their life.
Yeah.
What goes through my brain a little bit is like, you know, what's the world's biggest graveyard? And that's the ocean.
Mm.
Of like, you know, from the transatlantic slave trade to people crossing the ocean and whatnot, of like untold stories that of people, untold, like, you know, hopes and dreams, people that have passed during like, you know, the HIV epidemic, you know, in the early like 70s and 80s, like, you know, of like, we like lost a whole generation of people.
Sure.
You know, what were the things that were like not like, you know, like
the stories not, untold?
The stories are untold.
Yeah.
You know, Viola Davis says it like, you know, if you ever want to go to the hear a story, go to the graveyard that's the most untold stories.
Mm.
And like, I think for me, my legacy is like, I just want my story to be told.
Yeah.
You know, have you seen that movie Coco?
Like, oh wait, is that the guitar?
Yeah, that's remember me.
I love that song.
Yeah, no, it slaps. I watched the other day. but like, you know, and like, you know, all of other cultures and traditions. It's like from Vietnam, from Vietnamese to like, you know, African, is that like, you know, we remember our ancestors. We remember the people that came before us
and honor them
And like, and it's like usually typically with like, you know, nothing against the viewers that are like, you know, Catholic or Christians. It's like we kind of forget them as we pass down of this disconnect. And
it ends up just being like a picture on a fucking shelf. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like this, that person was for a while. They're not here anymore. That's the whole story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, go ahead.
No, it's like, and what would you want? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in a way, like we are kind of like the legacy of all those people before us, you know, like us just existing is like proof that they came and went. So I think, you know, like I don't know. It's cool. It's cool. You have a kid and you get to just be like, all right, well, you have two now. That is very true.
I got one and a half.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, that's.
And that, like, that element makes it weird to think about.
Sure.
Like that, you know what I mean? Cause like, I ideally, I would like part of the legacy that I leave behind to be like how my kids interact with each other, you know, or just anybody, how my kids interact. You know, I want to be able to give them like memories where they hear a song and they can think of like a dope time that we had together.
Yeah.
Or just like, what would my dad do in this situation? You know what I mean? Like I definitely idealize that, like being able to offer them guidance in ways that can like perpetuate when I'm not there.
Yeah, I think we all just want to be Uncle Ben, you know, like Jesus, we're got not that Uncle Ben, the other Uncle Ben.
I fucking love Rice. I love Rice so much, but 61 seconds is too fucking long.
Not the side eye. I'm like, me and Taylor both like.
I was just like, let me explain. Jambalaya? I'm a comic book fan.
I don't think I want to be that guy either. Like, he could have said that and not died.
He could have said that, but I mean, I think that the idea that like. And I know it's like fantasy or whatever, but like the idea that somebody was motivated to continue to do well because of something that somebody said, like, I feel like that's kind of, you know, what we're aiming for.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, and I don't, sorry, it's like this world can be cold at times.
Sure.
And I just want to show like love, you know, and wherever I go. And I hope that when I have descendants, because I will have a kid, I promise you, it's like, you know, it will be like, I hope that they just pass that like love and that joy, you know?
Yeah.
You, like, you hand it to them and they hand it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that feeling is almost like a tangible thing that you're able to like pass down and just pass off to other people, and being able to like add to the thing that's being passed is very like good concept. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that like our interactions, like they just have so much to do with like this world. Cause it's like, I don't know if you had a shitty cashier that like the rest of your day, you're like, fucking, it's a bad day now, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, if we can negatively impact somebody for like almost that long of a time, it's like, what is the positive impact that we could also have for even a longer time?
Yeah. And like, how can we like, as people, just like, you know, be a structure and like in this world that people can like come to or to see, to know that this world doesn't have to be so cold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To like, I don't know. I really like love my godbrother, and like, and that's because I'm like watching the world through like this 10-year-old's eyes.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, like I get to contribute in a positive way.
Yes. Oh yeah.
There's so many people in this world that just take and take. And I don't know, like, those people don't get remembered.
No,
you know?
No. Nobody, the only people who remember the CEO who got shot are the people who are happy he's dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just kind of like what you said about like adding something that like gets remembered. That, like, I trailed off there for a second. I was trying to piece the entire thought together.
The amount of times that you guys have watched me do that, and I'm just like, I can get to the end of this sentence, it'll be fine.
I remember liking what you said, and then I was like, what was it? It's dope. It's gone.
Now I'm spacing too. But yeah, like, I don't know. Legacy is it's this thing of like, once we pass, and it's almost morbid to even think about death, you know, but it's also something you have to consider, because it's like, at some point I'm going to not be here, you know? You were talking about, God damn it. Nope. I don't have it. I almost had it. Son of a bitch. We're falling apart in the last. No, we got 4 minutes.
At math. We have 5.
Shut up, Taylor. I don't know. But yeah, just the idea that like, legacy is a hospital. I'm falling apart.
I really like what you said about like, almost living vicariously through a kid and like being able to like offer the like antithesis. It came back to me. It was like a really long yo-yo. It came back to me. Fucking like, or just like being the antithesis to the cruelty of the world.
Yes.
When people are dealing with those things and, or when they have an experience that reminds them of how cruel the world is, being able to be like kind of a beacon of warmth. And it's like, not everything is like that.
Yes.
And when you need warmth, I have that to offer. Hopefully that extends beyond me being here.
And I also think that like too, like, I don't know, like we've all like at some point where it's like, you know, the emo kid, you know, just like,
oh yeah,
I'm like angry all the time. Sure. And like this world means nothing to me. And then after a while, it's like, I have a date. Like I will have a date. I don't know that date of like when I'm going to pass.
Yeah.
Like it's going to happen if I like it or not. Mm-hmm. The most humbling thing of every human. And like, not only what am I going to leave behind, but like, how is that going to transcend, like, you know what I mean? Like me being here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how can I find joy? How can I like live my life? Not only with the best optimism, but like with the best,
like output,
like not even output, but like how I'm gonna live.
Yeah.
How am I gonna live and just like, and just meet people to let them live.
Well, like I think there's like two sides to that coin, and it's very much how you approach it. Cause I think both the most pessimistic and optimistic thing that you could say is who cares? Cause you like, you can be pessimistic and be like, oh fucking who cares? And like nothing matters. Everything's pointless. But the optimistic side of that is you could just be like, yeah, who fucking cares? I'm going to do like what makes me happy. That might be fucking cringy. That might be weird. That might like, I don't know, have like a negative repercussion as far as like the capitalistic way that everything works, but like that, like this is what I want to do. This is what I want my output to be. This is what I want my legacy to be. You know, and I think that just like, yeah, so just saying who cares with optimism is a very powerful thing.
No, I like that.
A powerful thing.
Well, and now that I finally remembered, the thing that you were talking about with like the coldness of the world is like, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of examples of like the world being cold, you know? Did you ever read the comic book, The Preacher?
No, but I saw the TV show.
TV show. It's a pretty wild show, but there is this scene in there that like, scene, couple of panels that like always stuck with me where his like dad was like giving him a hug as like a small child, and he's just like, hey, you got to be one of the good guys. There's already enough of the bad. And I'm like, yes, there are plenty of people out there doing the wrong things for the wrong reasons. You know, it's like, I want somebody to look, you know, at some point and be like, but that's somebody who tried to do better. So yeah. I mean, I don't think that we really get to predict the legacy that we'll leave behind. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, at the same time, it's like, I don't think it's entirely necessary, because it almost allows us to just build that, you know, build whatever we can right now. It's like, if I knew that I was leaving nothing behind, I might not build right now.
Yeah.
When it's also hard to perceive what your own legacy might be, especially if you're like,
you know, my impact now.
Right. And I think the best example of that, I think the movie's like Schindler's List or something, where he's like saving like Jewish kids from like Nazi camps and shit. And his whole thing, like one of the things he says when he's like getting pulled away, he's like, I should have just saved one more. And like, he's distraught as fuck about the idea that he couldn't save one more. But his legacy is that he saved all these fucking people. So like his perception on himself even is a little warped there.
Well, like, and like, it's like that client I was talking about earlier, right? She passed. Mm. She passed, right? And that impact, like her legacy was something that of like, oh, I'm gonna make this like programming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, exactly. You don't know what your legacy is going to be, or the impact that you're going to have on people.
Yeah. Or even who.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it inspired you to become the social worker that you are now. So it's like, that's in all the people who you impact. So it's like, you truly can't like estimate something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool to know that like, even though she's not with us anymore, that she is still having like a positive impact through you by proxy, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're the motivation that she almost like accidentally offered you, it has turned into something that's like flourishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, we can turn these moments of like sadness and like in hardness and like whatever into something positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, I think that's also a blessing too, because if I knew what impact that I was gonna have on people, I'd be like, oh, yeah, like let me just try to change that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. let me save you the trouble.
Yeah.
No, I think that, I don't know. I know that folks are passing, folks are coming into the world, and I think that enjoying, I don't know. Everybody says the talks about the fucking now, and I'm so sick of the now. Oh my God. What if the now sucks? I'm in that. Now what do I do?
wait for the next now.
Wait for the next now, I guess. But with all that said, I mean, I think that, you know, right now the best thing we can do is create and, you know, just accept that we probably don't get to decide what that is. But, you know, if I create right now, maybe somebody will decide something cool.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like get to be the heart in the room.
Yeah.
When we create and like from the heart, like that is the now.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Know?
Absolutely. Like, I think the other way to do that too, like if you're not like putting something out into the world that's positive, you can just be a safe space. You know what I mean? Like you can be a warm zone for people to exist next to. Even if you're not like offering stuff like outwardly, you know, I think that there's both those ways, I think, can be very effective.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. Cleo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Taylor Absolutely. And Zane. You Absolutely. Guys are really great. If you want to follow me on my Instagram, it is booty.cheeks.
Booty.cheeks.
Yes.
Pulling up my phone right.
Follow this person. it's been such a treat having you. Thank you so much. We'll see you all next time. And I'll see you next time.
I'll see you next time, too.
All right, way to play us.
Never going
to
be here again.